Hey, welcome. If you lose connection at any time, reconnect by clicking the link on your email invite. Committee members, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Use the raise hand feature if you wish to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Staff, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you are asked a question. And for members of the public, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted in the chair. Please do not use your video. Chair, the floor is yours.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Can you call the roll, please?
Yes, Commissioner Greg Reed.
Present.
Reed, present. Commissioner Mary Strickland.
Present.
Strickland, present. Alder Isidore Knox is not here. Chair, a quorum is present.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. I forgot. Can I second the minutes?
You
We
can.
only got two people.
You can.
Okay. So can I have a motion to approve the minutes from November 14, 2024? That's a long time ago, our last meeting.
I move to approve.
And I second. Unless there's any objections, I'll ask for unanimous consent. Hearing none, motion is approved. Is there any public comment? You said no, Lisa.
That is correct. The registration reporting shows that there are no members of the public registered to speak.
Okay. So now we're going to have a review of the 2025 second quarter financials for the CDA. Alfredo, you're on.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'll be presenting the second quarter financial reports for both the Public Housing Authority and the redevelopment portfolio. I'll start with a high overview and then I'll walk through highlights for each program and property. For the Public Housing Authority program, we are stable on a financial ground. Revenues are trending slightly unfavorable to budget due to timing of HUD allocations, but this should adjust once the capital fund and the tenant service coordinator grant funds are released. The expenses are trending favorable across all programs, with notable savings in salaries, supplies, and utilities. And our occupancy remains strong, averaging in the mid-90s. Let me start with public housing. We operate 762 units under HUD's public housing program. Revenue is projected 6% unfavorable, but it will improve when HUD again releases the 2025 capital fund and Ross Grant funds. Expenses are projected 12% favorable, mainly from savings in salaries, supplies, and utilities. The occupancy is averaging 95%, just shy of our 98% target. The net operating income is projected at a $480,000 surplus. We also completed several capital upgrades this quarter, like unit modernization, appliance replacements, playground improvements, and system replacements such as boilers, furnaces, smoke detectors, and outlets. Now I'm going to go with the multifamily housing. This portfolio includes 160 units and one commercial space at Parkside and Caribous. Revenue is projected at 3% unfavorable. Again, it's pending release of HUD Reservice Coordinator grant funds. The expenses are trending 19% favorable. Thanks to savings in salary, supplies, and purchase services. The occupancy is at 89%, which is below target, but we are actively addressing turnover. The NOI is projected at $229,000 without reserve usage. Now I'm going to talk about the Section 8 housing voucher program. We administer like around 2,170 vouchers and about 1,048 are in use on average this quarter. The average housing assistance payment is not $941 per voucher. The administrative program is projected to end the year with $703,000 favorable to the higher fee revenue and savings in salaries and supplies. And then this program, special initiatives, continues to support veterans, family unification, and emergency housing vouchers. Does anyone have any questions on the public housing authority programs? If not, then I could start on the redevelopment portfolio. I'll start with the Bird Oaks Senior Apartments. The occupancy is very strong at 98%. The operation cash balance is at $106,000. We both reserved fully funded. Maintenance expenses are projected at 11% favorable. The asset management goals include expanding resident activities and social services. And on the Monona Shores apartment, this property faces some financial challenges. The cash balance is at $41,000 and reserves are at $6,000. The occupancy is at 92% and the revenue is projected 7% unfavorable due to units being vacant longer for rehab. On the positive side, we have seen improvements in rent collection and utilities are 90% favorable. The focus remains on addressing major capital needs, especially unit modernization and rent collection. The next property is Revival Ridge Apartments. The occupancy is 86% lower than target. The operation cash balance is at $59,000 with reserves well funded. Expenses are favorable. Administration is at 50% under budget and maintenance is at 11% under budget. Though unit turnover costs are expected, goals in here are to include improving occupancy and addressing capital improvements and unwinding the LLC. The next one is Reservoir Apartments. Reservoir is performing well with 97% occupancy and a cash balance of $231,000. Vacancy loss is projected favorable due to lower turnover. Asset management goals include converting the commercial space into two new affordable units, replacing siding and windows, and modernizing units as they turn. The next property is the Village Sun Park. The operation cash balance is at $1.89 million with occupancy at 88%. While we are also tracking delinquent rents at $23,000. Administration, maintenance, and utilities are trending favorable due to reduced costs from vacant space. And redevelopment on the north side continues with a new parking structure nearing completion. And on the redevelopment general fund, the fund holds an operating balance of $26,000. Reserve usage this quarter reflects reimbursements from Village Sun Park and Triangle Taking Shape B1. The projections are favorable, primarily from salary savings. This fund continues to support general administration, bond repayments, and redevelopment activities. So, like a closing summary of what I've been talking about. In summary, Q2 shows overall stability for both the PHA and redevelopment portfolios. On the PHA side, expenses remain well managed. Revenues are expected to balance once HUD funds are released and capital upgrades are progressing. On the redevelopment side, properties like Bird Oaks and Reservoir are performing strongly, while Monona Shores and Revival Ridge need ongoing attention around occupancy and capital needs. And I think that's all for me. Does anyone have any questions?
Mary, Chris Koval has her hand raised.
Okay, Chris.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I just wanted to update some statistics or wording under the Village on Park summary. Just so you know, the parking structure is complete as of the end of June. We have our CO, and we've engaged Tri-North, who is conducting the central lot redevelopment, which is the last phase of our overall redevelopment thus far. And that work is including an ADS system and upgrades to that system in general, and the installation of a central green amenity area where people can sit and relax while they're on site. So that I just wanted to give you a quick update there. And with regards to the financial highlights, and that operating cash balance with the we are expecting for the redevelopment work to have a shortfall in the beginning of 2026 of roughly $410 that we're going to need to tap into our cash, balance account. Just wanted to provide you with a little future update there. And then with respect to the delinquent rent, that's mostly due to one tenant, which is VIP Nails, and they filed for bankruptcy. So those are my quick updates since this was put together. Any
Okay, thanks, Chris.
questions on that? Update. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Alfred, I wanted to ask you, do you have any concerns about any of the projects or programs that you just, updated us on?
No, I don't have any questions so far.
Oh, or concerns.
Oh, no, sorry, I have no concerns.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Do we need, Lisa, do we need to approve this report or
You don't
motion?
have to. I mean, you could motion to accept it. But you're actually, as a subcommittee, I don't think,
We don't have to.
right,
Okay, let's
Matt? They
go
don't.
on.
No,
Yeah.
you don't need to.
Nope, you're good.
Okay, let's just go on to the audit. First of all, thanks, Alfredo. That was great. And
Thank
let's
you.
go on to the CVA audit.
That would be me.
And that
Good
would be
afternoon. Yep, good afternoon. My name is Vasvi Joshi. I'm a senior manager at Baker Tilly's Madison office. Have been doing CDA's audit and the city's audit for a number of years. And I'll just go over some high-level financial highlights, and I'm going to share my screen. Okay, let me know if you're able to see the PDF that I'm
Yes,
sharing.
yes.
So this is the financial audited financial statements that we have issued as part of the audit. And just to explain the audit process a little bit, we do a lot of things combined for the city and the CDA. We look at the city's processes and controls over major transaction cycles, disbursements, payroll, that kind of stuff. And then, we do audit in two phases, a preliminary phase and then a final fieldwork. So preliminary phase is that's when we look at the processes, controls. We talk to a lot of people at the city and the CDA. We look at high level, what kind of activity has happened. That will help us determine the audit steps and the planning of the audit. That's how it goes. And then the second phase is that's when we do dive into the detail of all the numbers, and we do that in March, April timeframe. And as a result of that audit, we issue these audited financial statements. These financial statements have been prepared by the CDA staff and audited by Baker Tilly. The CDA staff started preparing those a couple of years ago. And the audit opinion we have, this is the independent auditor's report, and I have highlighted some key verbiage in this auditor's report says you can see our audit opinion is unmodified, which is the highest level of audit opinion any auditors could give you. And we did not audit the financial statements of Village and Park, MRCDC, the CDA 95-1, Winona Shores, and then all the LLCs, which is the discretely presented component units of the CDA. Those were audited by SVA, and we relied on their audit. We just brought their numbers into these financial statements. We do have one emphasis of matter to disclose to you, and we have the details as in under note two, and we can talk about a little more. And that was because this year the Triangle redevelopment project in the Triangle Fund had a restatement, which means there were some costs that were expensed in prior years in 2022 and 2023, but then later in 2024, it was determined that they should have been capitalized. These were the pre-development costs related to the Triangle development, and that these are like HUD-related projects. So that's in 2024, the approval and all happened, and then it was determined, yes, these projects are happening, development is happening, and then these are capitalizable costs. So that was about over $1 million. So we moved them out of the expense category and into the capital asset category, which means the total net position actually went up by over $1 million. So that's just the emphasis of matter. We have updated the 2023 and 2024 numbers wherever they are presented in this report and management discussion and analysis. And then we also have some details on that in this footnote too. What follows is the management discussion and analysis. So this is again just a very summarized version of comparative information compared to prior year, what went up and down and the reasons behind it. So I'm just gonna, look at this one table, which shows the activity, the balance sheet from 2023 and 2024. And then here's the income statement, 2023 and 2024. So as you can see, the net position has gone up over 12 million. Majority of that is because of Village on Park. They received TID funding for over $12 million. So that's what's causing the increase. And the $1 million that I talked about is not part of this 12 million. That $1 million was already factored into all the numbers that were presented here.
I've just got a quick question. That million is not included in the error, the four, or which is the 434 on the statement, the 434 error correction. Is that related
Correct.
to the
It is
million?
the yes, that is the error correction. And what page are you looking at?
The income statement, the,
This page.
yeah, it says error correction 434.
So the 434 was the 2023 portion of error corrections. Like I said, the expenses were from 2022 and 2023. So these 434 were expenses from 2022 that were capitalized, that should have been capitalized in 23. And then we had another almost 600,000 of expenses in 23 that should have been capitalized too. So then the cumulative is $1 million, but 434 is from 22 and about 600,000 is from 23.
Okay, thank you.
I've got a quick question about expensing versus capitalizing for the triangle. If the project had not moved forward, would those have stayed as expenses
Correct.
instead of getting capitalized?
Correct.
Okay.
That's why they are called pre-development costs, because you at that point you just didn't know, so if the project wasn't happening, then you were not going to capitalize that.
Okay, Mary, I think that's going to be an important point that we bring up with the full board, just so they don't think it was a mistake, but it's something that we need to, I think, maybe call out that, once we knew we were moving forward with the redevelopment project, there was a re I would maybe it's a reclassification, so that people don't jump to the conclusion that, oh, somehow somebody made a mistake. When it wasn't a mistake, it was just once we did have that decisive, you know, trigger point or inflection point, that's what caused it to get reclassified.
Yeah, that's good clarification. Thank you. That's good. You know, in that same vein, Vas, can you explain how come we don't amortize somehow the TIF $12 million? I read somewhere that there's a way of showing it as deferred income and a liability and recognizing it over the lifetime of the parking garage. Is there a reason we don't do it that way? We show it as a you know, grant income in 1 year.
So, I mean, I do think the Village on Park, I think they did capitalize those, and Lynn here, so you might know more about that. But then I think it was a contribution from TIF. So the other side of it does go to your income statement. So you credit the capital contribution and you debit the asset. So I think that's but Lynn might know more about it.
Yeah, I think you're right, just how you just described it. How it was recognized, the appropriate treatment for that TID revenue. The TID treatment is how it's recognizes revenue, not necessarily being deferred and recognized over the life of the parking structure.
Okay, because it definitely, you know, it's a, you know, a difference for the 1 year. You've got a $12 million increase in income and revenue,
right?
Which is it seems like would come under the category of extraordinary income or something. You know, it's not operating income or anything.
It is not. Yeah. And I mean, it was shown as non-operating. So this is where.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
The detail. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And then, I mean, if you also look at the cash activity for Village on Park, you can see it's like kind of like in and out. So it's like coming from TID and then going to just acquisition of capital assets. So if you just look at the cash activity for Village on Park, it didn't go up that much, but it's just that the income statement is on full accrual basis. So that's why it looks like, oh my gosh, we got the $12 million, but no, you didn't get that in cash. So I mean, high level, just looking at the activity for the general operating fund, it went up by close to 666. And again, most of it is because of this 588 of capital contributions from the city to the general operating fund. And that I believe that was related to like a state street project or something. So that's again, a capital contribution, like a one-time thing. Housing voucher fund, it went down by about $500,000. And that's because you can see the operation and maintenance, the expenses exceed what you are getting from HUD. So that's causing the decrease. And this is like 2 years in a row. So I hope, you know, some catching up happens in the next year or two. Otherwise, it keeps going down every year. All the other funds, cumulatively, they were like small enough activity. The non-major funds, the east-west triangle, you know, all of those, and that all of those combined activities presented in the back. The one change we had in the presentation this year is that the MRCDC used to be in the back as like a combined, we were showing combined activity in the front, but then MRCDC had enough activity this year that it got moved up in the front. So you can see it as a major fund now. So earlier last year, we only had three major funds. Now we have MRCDC as a major fund. And I believe it's going to continue to have more activity over the next couple of years. So it's going to maybe stay as a major fund versus all the other funds have not that much of significant activity. So they are all shown in the back. And then we just bring a total in the front. So that's all I have on the financial side. And then I have one more report that we can go through, but I'll take a pause if you have any additional questions on the financial statements.
No, I don't have any.
Good. Moving on to this other report, are you still able to see the other PDF that I switched to? It's called the Reporting and Insights.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
So again, this report talks about our responsibility as auditors, you know, and CDA's responsibilities, any key areas of focus, significant findings, and any internal control matters that we have identified. So this year, the CDA did have a material weakness, you know, a deficiency, which we call a material weakness. And that's, again, because, you know, these costs, you know, that we ended up moving the restatement of the net position. So once you have a restatement, then you automatically kind of have a material weakness. So this is the only thing that is causing the material weakness. We did not find any other adjusting entries or any other material changes to the CDA staff prepared financial statements. So we don't really have any concerns. I'm thinking this is a 1 year thing. And then now that the restatement is done, next year, we would likely go back to no material weaknesses again. The CDA and the city did implement new accounting standards. So one of them was related to compensated absences. So that's a new standard. There is just a little bit of change in how the accrued sick and vacation is calculated. The way the city had already done it, and the CDA was kind of part of the city calculation, it wasn't a material impact on the CDA. So the numbers did not drastically change compared to last year. So this is the only place we are saying that it was implemented. Otherwise, everywhere in the financial statements, it did not really have a material impact on any of those numbers. And then again, we talk about this accounting changes and error corrections because of that restatement that we had. Here are the group audits we talk about. So these are all the entities that are audited by SVA, and then we bring them into the CDA financial statements. So we have to note that here. Here are some non-attest services that Baker Tilly provides to the city. And then automatically, because CDA is part of the city, it's a component unit of the city, these were not directly provided to the city. These were services that were provided to the city, not the CDA. But we do have to bring them in this report and mention them because CDA is kind of a part of the city. And I think that's about it in this report. There are contact informations of Andrea, myself, who worked on the CDA's audit. Their numbers, emails, addresses are there. So if you have any further questions, any other comments, anything else you want to talk to us about, feel free to use these contact information to contact any of us. These are the new accounting standards that are coming up for the next couple of years that might impact the city and as a result to the CDA as well. We always talk to the city and the CDA staff ahead of the time, what kind of an impact and how we are going to implement. So I don't believe that the one that we're implementing next year will have a significant impact on the city or the CDA. And then the other two are a little bit farther, one more year to go for that. We did have one small uncorrected misstatement. So that was just like a $70,000 loan that should have been recorded as a loan receivable, but it was not recorded. It was missed in prior year. So then it was recorded this year. But again, it was small enough, not material, but we do have to mention it here. And that's the end of that report. And that's all I have. So,
okay, thank you. Is there any questions? Greg, you got any questions? Okay. One thing I wanted to bring up is I noticed in digging through this that we still have that issue that's come up before about $2.3 million in cash that's uninsured at banks. Is there anything we can do about that? I mean, there are a lot of programs that provide, I know at Baird we had programs that provide coverage by placing, you know, cash at different banks.
And I'm gonna
We had looked into that, Mary, and it was quite expensive to get additional insurance. So what we implemented is a sort of recurring method of sweeping owner draws and sweeping the cash over into the city's account. And we're currently working on, although this meeting is not about the MRCDC, we're currently working on getting that established for the MRCDC as well.
So I do want to mention that this, the 2.3 million uncollateralized is for Village on Park. It is not related to any of the other funds. It's just mainly just Village on Park. So if you.
Okay. But this, the sweep that you're talking about, Lisa, doesn't necessarily provide FDIC insurance, right? It just sweeps it into the city's.
It sweeps it into the city's account, which has much greater protections and insurance.
Okay.
Because the city has established that.
Okay. I know this has come up before. And we also have that. We're going to do a refi on the 1.3 million with Monona shares. That comes up 8/26. We're making plans for that.
We will need to address that.
We got a 3.25 interest rate. It's probably going to be higher. I think we've talked about that also in the past.
We'll also have to refi for the tax credit projects that are coming out of their compliance window. So in the past, I think we've talked about going out with multiple and trying to get a couple loans refied at the same time.
Okay. So it's on your radar.
Yep.
Okay. I don't have it. Greg, do you have anything else? Questions?
I guess the broad question I had was trying to understand, given some of the tenant delinquencies we've had, where exactly some of those figures would have shown up. Are they, and looking at some of the reports, were they in accounts receivable? I was just trying to decipher if those were showing up in any of our reports. I think it was looking at like Truax 1 and 2, wondering where that might have shown up overall, and how those accounts receivable would be recognized if at all in the audits.
Not sure if maybe Katie, you want to speak maybe first to how we handle bad debt and write-offs and such. Because that has a reflect on how receivables show.
So, I mean, sorry, could you clarify exactly what was the question? About the tenant delinquencies.
Yeah, and I know that some of the HUD requirements are that their repayments are, I mean, they can't exceed, 30%? That even if somebody owes a lot of money, it could take a very long time for us to collect that money. And if somebody is part of one of those repayment plans, how do we account for that? Are those like aged receivables, or how all does that get accounted for? And how is that reflected in any of our statements that we've received for any of the properties?
That is a very, very small amount. As far as I understand, the process is completed in Elite, and any of these balances that the tenant is unable to pay is written off after about 60 days. And then if the tenant does want to, they enter into a repayment agreement, or they do end up paying off that balance, we reinstate the write-off. So we don't necessarily have a lot of aged receivables, or I believe that that information is available in Elite, but for our purposes, the amounts are so small that we don't necessarily keep track of those in any real way in our ERP system. And in the financial statements, you would see those as like a bad debt expense, which we don't, we separate those out for some HUD reporting, but for the citywide financials, we don't have, I don't believe there's a line item just for bad debt expense. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just was wanting to know and if it was reflected in the audited statements. So I just, that helps.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay, I want to thank the staff and Vasi and your group for this audit. It's a complex, complicated audit as I waded through it here the last day. And I want to thank you for all your efforts and all your work on this. And you've been with us, I know, for a while since I've been dealing with the Finance Committee. Again, we don't need a motion to approve this report, correct? Do we?
You don't. No.
Okay. So is there anything else for the good of the order?
The last item on the agenda is adjournment, which you would need a motion for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything? I refuse to offer that. No, I'm just kidding. I move to adjourn, and I also echo Mary's thanks to everyone for their efforts.
Okay, I second that. And unless there's any objections, I'll ask for unanimous consent. And hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll get you something, Lisa.